It's overpriced margaritas and digital actor replacement on this week of Of Horses and Men with Leslie and Ben. Folks, I'm the Ben of that.
And I'm the Leslie. This is a weekly podcast about Netflix original comedy series, BoJack Horseman.
And Leslie, my friend, what episode are we talking about today?
Today we are talking about season 2, episode 12, Out to Sea, the finale, season 2 finale.
BoJack returns from his misadventures in New Mexico and finds his house in ruins. Diane has been crashing at the Horseman estate for months now, and her life isn't the only one in disarray. Princess Carolyn is starting a new agency, but her personal relationship with Rabinowitz is on the fritz. Diane and Mr. Peanut Butter still aren't talking to each other, and Mr. Peanut Butter doesn't even know his wife is back in the country. Meanwhile, Todd is doubling down on his commitment to improv comedy by joining the Giggle Ship. All this, and it would seem that Lenny Turtletaub finished BoJack's dream project without him, and then erased him from it completely. It's the season 2 finale of Horses and Men and BoJack Horseman.
Yeah!
Leslie, are you excited about this episode?
I'm excited anytime we get, I was excited for the season 1 finale. I'm excited for this just because, we did it again.
Yeah, that's right. We hit a milestone.
Season 2.
And to think we only started this show a calendar year ago.
Did we?
Nah, we started in February.
See?
So we're 8 months
into this.
We're eight months into this. This is a jam-packed episode, but man, I don't know about you, but I think it goes by pretty quickly.
It does. It really, really does. I think that the reason for that is the need to wrap up everything else that has happened that was not the entire last episode, because of course, we haven't seen these characters since episode 10.
That's right. For the listener, you may not recall necessarily, but we saw absolutely no Mr. Peanut Butter, a tiny bit of Diane, and no Todd at all in the last episode.
Yeah.
Say nothing of all the other minor characters like Rabinowitz.
Sure.
We are now, just like BoJack skipped town, we are now coming back with him.
Yep.
Into Los Angeles, and we're seeing everything that we missed out on in the intervening 2 months. And boy... some shit went down.
I love the beginning of this episode. I love the little montage of Diane idly watching Mr. Peanut Butter do his show on television and live his life, and the way that it immediately segued into BoJack's return on the balcony outside. I loved it. I thought it was so good. I thought it was such a great return to form after they did something that was so different in the last episode that they plunked us back into the world of Hollywood, and particularly what's going on with Diane and her, or what's not, as the case may be. I absolutely adored it. I absolutely adored it.
Yeah, the sheer absence of things that she's been doing.
Yeah. So that was really great.
Yeah, I said on a previous episode... which one it was escapes me, but I said that I absolutely love nonlinear storytelling. Right up next to that is this kind of concurrent storytelling. This opening sequence in which we see the screen split horizontally, and on the top half is Diane's life, and on the bottom half is Mr. Peanut Butter's life. Just going through a normal day, and we are kind of introduced to the visual gag that Mr. Peanut Butter has already done two or three things before Diane even wakes up, and Diane wakes up hanging upside down from the couch, surrounded by like pizza boxes and beer cans.
Yeah.
While he's already like at work.
Sure.
Yeah. We get a nice, I mean, it's quite literally split screen.
I love it. I love it so much.
Into their lives and what they've been doing or not doing.
And it weirdly brings this really great energy into the beginning of the episode. It kind of tells you and gives your brain the idea that, okay, a lot of stuff's going to happen. I'm ready for this.
Yeah, we've talked about this a number of times in season 2 that, oh yeah, this show's meant to be binged.
Yeah.
So this comes right after, that long musical sequence to the BoJack theme as he's driving back into LA, the, oh, you're still here? Bit.
Yeah.
And then, boom, high energy. Let's get back to it.
It's pretty great. So I would like to point out, as we're talking about this episode chronologically-ish, kind of, this is the first time that we have seen an intro change in a while. We haven't seen an intro change in quite some time, but the intro has changed slightly. Wanda is no longer in the intro to BoJack Horseman. She is no longer in the apartment. Yeah.
As she is now two episodes removed from the story.
Yep. Only one of which was still in, you know, the land of Hall. Because that was episode 10 where she actually goes away, right? Because that's what prompts him to go to New Mexico.
Yeah. Oh, only two episodes removed.
Right, yeah. Right. Episode 10. So this was really, and since they didn't even do the intro in the last one, this was their very first opportunity to omit Wanda from BoJack's house, which they did. So that was the only real difference in the intro. But since we do intro watch, it's been a long time since we've had a change. We had a change in this episode. No more Wanda.
And I imagine, we haven't watched ahead yet, but I imagine season two will change again.
Actually, yes, and I already know how it does, but I'm not going to say right now. I remember seeing it and being like, oh my gosh, that's clever, but I'm not gonna say right now.
All right. So let me actually pan over to my notes. That was from memory. I have a lot to say about digital actor replacement.
Okay.
That should probably wait a bit. We should probably get some of the fun stuff out of the way before we get to the big topic.
Well, okay, sure. I mean, chronologically speaking, we can definitely do that because there is an entire reveal that happens prior to us finding out that BoJack has been digitally replaced, in that at Herb's funeral at the end of season one, BoJack tells Princess Carolyn with his residuals to do whatever, just, you know, give it to an orphanage or something. And he apparently made so much that she was able to build an orphanage, and some hijinks ensue there. That is a thing that now exists in the BoJack Horseman canon in Hollywood.
Yes, and it's initially in his name, right?
Yes.
Because the giant portrait is of him before it's of Herb.
At first, it is titled the BoJack Horseman. I think it's just the BoJack Horseman Orphanage, I think is what it's called. And they have the portrait of him, you know, is a sneezing pic at the top of the mantle or what have you, which was a good touch, I thought.
I agree. He dedicates an orphanage. There's a nice little hedgehog that thanks him for his time. There's some jokes about sandwiches. But then he returns home to, again, a place that is absolutely in ruins and probably smells absolutely terribly, to find Todd kind of laughing his way in.
Yeah.
On his way out. He's just grabbing some things before he heads out.
Yeah!
To work for the Giggle Ship. Which I guess I should rewind, because I didn't mention his initial meeting with, what's the name of the cat?
Copernicus,
that's right.
Yeah, Copernicus and Todd. Because that's how we actually cut back to Todd. At the end of episode 10, he gets beckoned over by Copernicus in his booth at the bar. And we are picked right back up with Todd talking to Copernicus, and Copernicus telling completely original, definitely not lifted from a book, butt jokes.
Yes. And he sways him over to the Giggle Ship, a comedy cruise line where Todd will be mastering the trade of improv. And, I mean, yeah, he sells him to come do comedy on a cruise ship. But it looks like Todd's... I mean, we'll flash forward a little bit. It looks like Todd is not so much doing comedy as sweeping up after guests.
Sure.
And it's a janitorial position with a little bit of showtime.
But to be fair, though, in defense of improv comedy and in defense of the Giggle Ship and in defense of Copernicus, you know, that's kind of how it works in L.A., too. You know, you go out to make it big and you end up washing dishes for like 30 years. Or however long it takes.
Yeah. No matter where you go, but like especially in areas with high density of artists, entry-level artistry positions are bad.
Yeah.
No, it reminds me of Pete Holmes's Crashing, which was a show on HBO. It still is. I'm sorry. I guess season 3 is probably going to come out soon.
Okay.
But it's about a guy that's been trying to get into comedy kind of haphazardly for years, but, you know, it never really worked out. And now his wife is divorcing him because of that.
Okay.
And so that motivates him to actually get his act together, quite literally, and actually, you know, like capital T, try for it. But he also got kicked out of the house, so he's homeless. So he is crashing on other comedians' couches.
Oh. So
a lot of big name comedians that we would know from the real world are essentially playing themselves in this, including John Mulaney and Sarah Silverman.
I want to watch this.
Oh, it's great. I really, really enjoyed it.
I'm going to watch this now.
But the way the reason I'm connecting... Oh, no, it's, like, absolutely fantastic. It's all on HBO, which I assume you have because you watch Game of Thrones.
I do. I have the add-on for Hulu because that's how I roll.
Hell yeah. But the reason I bring this up is because as he tries to get his first couple of stand-up gigs, like, no one's going to give him a headlining set. But, like... He keeps showing up to places. He's like, hey, can I sign up to be a stand-up here? Or, like, can I have a stand-up gig here? And people are like, no, we'll, like, call you at the end of the show if we still need a pad for time and stuff like that. Or, yeah, you can go hand out flyers for the club. And, like, if you hand out enough flyers and you get enough people to come here for us, then, yeah, we'll give you, like, 5 minutes at the beginning and you can warm up for whatever real comedian shows up.
I see.
Like, that kind of stuff.
I see.
So, but... The point is he has these delusions about, like, oh, yeah, you can just be a stand-up in New York or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you get to stand up in front of the brick wall background with your microphone and just do your set.
Ah, yes.
But he's just getting, like, essentially scraps.
Sure.
But it just reminds me of that because now Todd is like, oh, cool, I'm going to get my big start in comedy. But
right.
It's a half janitorial position, which he lives in, like, a broom closet.
Is that, though? I mean, is that something that Todd really thinks? Though, because I feel like he was pretty wowed just by the concept of getting to
be on a boat,
be in a broom closet, do the menial work. I don't think that he had any really grand aspirations or anything. Like we said in episode 10, or like you pointed out, you know, Todd said that his sense of community was the big thing, which was very similar to a different ideology that won't be named here. But we did discuss that. It was mainly the fact that he wanted to feel like he was part of something, which I think he does because Copernicus makes him feel like that. And of course, the lie that they all have the same, you know, the same quarters. And of course, Todd's reaction at first, you know how much I love my boy. Of course, Todd's first reaction being, you know, no more couch sleeping for me. I got a mattress. Good stuff.
Is sleeping on a couch in the middle of a mansion worse than having your own room in a broom closet?
Well, one of those things contains BoJack, though.
Yeah, that's true. It's more of the toxic element of his shitty friend.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, we can talk about in literally just a second.
Sure.
But I really did appreciate the line. When Copernicus is giving him the walkthrough through the ship. Oh, but for the guests, it's just to, you know, drink their overpriced watered-down margaritas for $8.99.
Yes.
And then I love Todd's response of, wow, we must all make a lot of money here.
Yeah.
Oh, no, no, no.
Oh, Todd.
Oh, no, no, baby. Capitalism is going to hurt you.
My hapless little cream puff.
He doesn't know. The worker doesn't get the money. Anyway, yes, I that's one of my favorite jokes. My actual favorite joke is still Todd-related, but we'll talk about that at the end of the show.
Okay.
It's kind of, yeah, just to get away from BoJack's house.
Sure.
Because BoJack sucks.
He does.
BoJack sucks a lot in general, but BoJack sucks at this point a lot in particular.
He does.
Todd.
And Todd comes back to get his stuff, and he gives that beautiful monologue about how he stayed over from some unknown as of yet party. That question won't get answered until season 5, folks.
It all connects around.
It does. It truly does.
Leslie, not a joke, I might rewatch just that episode again tonight because that was such a good episode.
Halloween Party, it's a good one. And it has a lot of history in it, too. But
yeah, and it's so fucking fluid and so fucking fast that I feel it's one of those episodes that you can only gain more from watching it again.
I agree. But
right now,
back to season 2.
Yeah, Todd tells a story that's like, hey, remember that one time, the first night I was here, I stayed over, and then in the morning, I made you pancakes, and I made you a lot of pancakes, and you kept eating the pancakes, and then you yelled at me for making you eat so many pancakes, and then you chased me around, and you were full from all those pancakes.
Yeah.
Pancakes are an important part of this story, and it turns out later that that's wrong.
Yeah.
But, you know, he tells this whole story, and he's like, yeah, anyway, it was nice to just be wanted for a bit.
Yeah.
But then packs up his bags and leaves.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, BoJack just checked out. And the last time they saw each other was Todd explicitly inviting him to his improv show.
To his graduation. For his
improv graduation show. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And BoJack did not show up.
No.
And then from Todd's perspective, BoJack just disappeared for 2 months and he had no idea where he was.
Well, that's everybody's perspective.
Well, Princess Carolyn knew where he was.
Except for Charlotte's. Yikes, too soon. Sorry, not
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, he asks, hey, Todd, how was your graduation show? And he's like, oh, that was 2 months ago. And BoJack fires back with, oh, I'm sorry. And, like, Todd practically cuts him off with, you're not.
Yeah.
This is one of many instances, and they don't come up too often, of sincere Todd Chavez.
My favorite flavor of Todd Chavez.
Normally, this is a character that is dunked in so much kind of comedic irony, like, oh boy, would I, kind of comedic storytelling, Todd's wacky hijinks, etc., that we don't really get a lot of sincere character moments out of him.
Oh, when we
at least
do,
not
though.
This early in the show.
No.
But this one, holy hell.
Oh, but when we do, oh, that's the food I feed on, Ben.
That is some, like, quality dark chocolate.
You know how much I love it. You know how much I do.
That's the refined stuff.
And you know, at the end of season 4, we get the really, really good stuff. But the precursor to that, the amuse-bouche, if you will, to the delicious meal that we get, which is season 4 Todd's speech, is this one, in which he is sincere and he tells the pancake story, and then he goes off, he leaves, he says goodbye, and makes his way to the giggle ship.
Yeah, Aaron Paul does something in his performance where he really does drop the slapsticky, you know, what I abbreviated as the, oh boy, would I,
he
kind
does.
Of way that Todd talks, and he actually kind of drops into a real character for a moment. And you can hear, like, a real character voice behind that just is like, nah, it's okay. I knew you weren't going to, kind of.
My heart.
Our baby's hurting.
Our baby's hurting, Ben. Ugh.
And I know it's the intention of the show, and it's high praise for the screenwriters and Aaron Paul, but I feel feelings that I don't want them.
Yeah, basically. I don't want to feel like this right now.
I don't like being manipulated like this.
And yet we keep watching.
Yeah.
And then we elect to talk about it. Yeah. As if that didn't hurt, well, badly enough. Let's talk about it for a bit.
Leslie, real quick. Arguably, this is probably the most either of us have talked about a single piece of media, right?
Oh, without a doubt.
We're coming up on, like, at least 20 hours of this.
Oh, God, yeah. Without a doubt. This is definitely the most I've ever talked about any particular piece of media, for sure. Well,
tweets don't count.
Yeah, I was about to say, like verbally talked?
Verbally talked.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Without a doubt.
Obviously, this isn't one conversation. This is, you know, 24, 45-minute segments over the course of yada yada. And I cut so much out of the show anyway.
That's true. We do a lot of talking that no one ever hears.
Yeah. You could stack up all of my tweets about, I don't know, the DC movies or whatever. Sure. It wouldn't even come close to a half of an episode of this show.
Sure.
We are hashtag invested in BoJack Horseman.
Yeah.
Literally. I paid money for this show.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, we have a Patreon at patreon.com.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so our baby's hurting.
Yeah. Poor Todd. And he makes you feel it, too.
He does. It drops the comedic irony, and it goes straight for
a real
sincere voice.
Sincere characterization of Todd Chavez.
It's this. It's, you can't just be sorry. You have to do better.
Oh, we're getting to that. That is the main course. This is but the amuse-bouche, as I've said. Let me have this,
right,
Ben.
Right. All right. We won't talk about the future ones. The other one, though, Leslie, I'll cut this out. The other one I'm thinking of is, of course, the, I think I might just be nothing.
Oh, that one's so good, too. Oh, yeah. My God. Oh, I love Todd so much. I love Todd. So while all of this is going on with Todd, you know, we get to get our first glimpse into Princess Carolyn and Rabenowitz's professional slash personal relationship as they embark onto their own adventure together in a way that is contentious, as we discover that Witherspoon is in the hospital and Rabenowitz did not give a single shit about that. And as Princess Carolyn said, well, we burned that bridge in the elevator as they leave.
Yeah, they're quite literally packing up their boxes. And I will say, I love that Princess Carolyn's box has her cat toy tree and that he has a bunch of carrots in his.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're like, yeah, we're finally going to show those rat-faced bastards what we think of them. And then, yeah, they come out to the news that presumably Charlie Witherspoon Sr.
Did
we
imagine.
Get a first name on him ever?
I don't know.
Well, Mr. Witherspoon, voiced, of course, by Stephen Colbert, has had a stroke and is in the hospital.
Right.
And that, of course, means that Charlie's in charge.
Of our days?
Yeah, I realized as I was saying it.
Charlie's in charge of our wrongs and our rights. And I need to what?
You good?
I had to get it out of my system.
No, right after I said that, I realized what was about to happen.
Fuck me. All right.
Because, Leslie, I do not trust you to exercise self-control.
I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. It had to happen.
Yeah, so let's talk about Princess Carolyn. So there's two Princess Carolyn scenes. I guess there's three, because the opening one where she's hitting BoJack with a broom, telling him that, you know, hey, moron, you're shy. They finished the movie without you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
But the first time we see her just in her own scene, it's her and Rabenowitz, and they are looking at this new office space that they are considering leasing together for their brand new agency. And basically, and I thought this was very clever on behalf of the script, that it's just as Princess Carolyn is starting to talk about her dreams and her excitement for it, that Rabenowitz quite literally steps out on the conversation to text his estranged wife,
who yeah.
maybe not all that estranged after all.
Well, because you know how it goes. Sometimes you say you're going to get divorced, and then you get back together, and it's like, yeah. But we've been sleeping together for months. Oh, poor Princess Carolyn.
Yeah, I just appreciated that timing, that literally just as she hits her high, that he's like, welp, anyway, and then moves off to the side.
Yeah.
Obviously, in this business relationship, we'll find out in a sec that she's the one who ultimately dumps him. But that action of his is, certainly has parallels and is definitely a red flag in and of itself.
So later when they're at Vigor and they're getting ready to leave, they burn some bridges. Some bridges get burnt.
Yeah, that's a fair way of saying it.
Quite spectacularly, or as Princess Carolyn so succinctly put it, well, we burned that bridge because... So it was mostly just Rabenowitz who really put the nail in that coffin by continuing to slag on the entire company after being told that Witherspoon Sr. has had a stroke and is now in the hospital. He did not seem to care about that at all, even at Princess Carolyn's protests.
Yeah, they're packing up to go and... Rutabaga Rabenowitz is so excited to just get the whole, you know, fuck you, I quit speech mm-hmm. out of the way. Mm-hmm. You know, keeps saying, let's tell those rat-faced bastards what we finally think of them. That he kind of, well, he's not dead, so not pissing on his grave, but pissing on his hospital bed, I guess,
sure.
of Witherspoon Sr., and therefore absolutely burns the bridges with everyone at Vim and Vigor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nope. It's only Vigor.
Oh, yes, you're
the
right.
The second one is named Vim.
Oh, that's right. Right. Their new firm is Vim. Mm-hmm. Clever. Yes, but Princess Carolyn, realizing that Rabenowitz has kind of been lying to her, but like still wants romantic affection from her.
Romantic affection. Whatever. Rabenowitz just wants to get his dick wet. That is what Rabenowitz wants. He wants to have his cake and eat it too, to get his dick wet and still stay married to his wife.
Sounds like there's multiple cakes he probably wants to eat. So Princess Carolyn, realizing that the entire deed and lease and all that stuff for all the business shit for their new agency is all in her name, literally just on the spot walks out on him.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I believe, the last time we see Rutabaga Rabinowitz.
I'm pretty sure it is. I'm pretty sure we don't see him again, which is great because it's such a great way. And the look on her face, too, when she's like, peace, bitch. I love it. Yeah. I love it.
Who is he effectively replaced by? What's the name of her assistant
Jonah.
In season 3 onwards? Yeah, Jonah.
Nope,
I like
that's
Jonah
wrong.
A lot.
Judah.
Judah.
Judah's his
yes,
name.
Judah. I like Judah a lot,
yeah,
actually.
Judah's great, but we'll get to Judah. We'll get to Judah
yes,
later.
Yes, yes. Well, anyway, he's been swept out. New characters are coming in Princess Carolyn's life. Season 3 holds great potential for her, and I love that kitty so much.
I know.
All right, let's move forward with... We should probably talk about Diane and Mr. Peanut Butter.
Yeah. So, Diane and Mr. Peanut Butter, that is a plot point that takes up very little screen time in which a lot of stuff happens.
Yeah, we already talked about the intro of this episode, which is them kind of concurrently going through their days, not together, and one in a lot worse of a situation than the other. Basically, right after Princess Carolyn solidifies her new company, she asks Diane to come on board as a social media manager, ghostwriter for her. And Princess Carolyn, by the way, drops a fun little tidbit about her own personality. When she says, like, oh no, I'm so desperate to take care of others even when I don't know how to fix myself that I'm willing to take a chance on you.
Yeah.
Which I kind of love how this show handles that level of telegraphing.
Sure.
They yeah. just out and say it like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was very, very blatant, you know. And I mean, they do that with BoJack a lot, too. He'll just straight up say, this is my deal.
Oh, what? I just push people away because I blah, 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 blah,
right,
blah.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like there's a couple times in season one when he's talking to Diane where he just says, like, what? Now you're going to tell me that I blank, 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 blank.
Right.
And like, yeah, literally, dude.
That is literally what you do. Yeah, I like that. They do it very well. And I'm a huge fan of whenever they do that. But it's particularly well done here because it very quickly and neatly wraps up the answer to why would Princess Carolyn want to help Diane?
Yeah, all. They don't know each other very well.
Well, no, especially because it lasts. Last season, yeah, remember it's me, Princess Carolyn, the pink cat. And Diane's like, yeah, we've met several times. You were at my wedding. So yeah.
I love those two.
I know, me too.
So Diane gets a job as a social media, quote unquote, ghostwriter for Princess Carolyn's publicity company. And that means that she will be writing tweets for Sextina Awkwafina, which will be a major plot point in the next season.
Yes, it will. Yes, it will.
But she meets with Sextina Awkwafina at the only restaurant set that the BoJack Horseman show has.
Elephant.
Which is the one, incidentally, owned by BoJack Horseman himself and frequented by Mr. Peanut Butter. There's a moment right after Sextina Awkwafina leaves that Diane makes direct eye contact with Mr. Peanut Butter just as he's, like, signing autographs for some fans at the bar. And they have an intense stare down. And then, genuinely, a really sweet moment happens.
It is really sweet. You don't know what to expect from it when it begins to happen because it could really go any conceivable way. But once it starts, Mr. Peanut Butter calls Diane. She picks up the phone at the table. They're staring right at each other. And then he asks her, how is Cordovia?
Yeah. Yeah, there's like a couple takes back and forth. There's maybe like a solid 10 seconds just flipping back between the two as they stare each other down. And yeah, the audience is obviously left to wonder like, oh, what's the emotion that's at play here?
Yeah, yeah.
Is he going to get mad about it or whatever? And no. It's like the nicest way this could have ended.
It really, really is. And I think that the way that it happened between them was good as a break. You know, we're not going to get any new material. We're not going to know what's going to happen with them next. And I feel like there being an awful lot of strain right before the break between seasons would not have been as effective for us to care as much about the characters and their relationship to one another. It's very obvious based on what Diane did, this is not going to be okay immediately. But I also feel very strongly that this is proving that they are strong together and that they are going to try for their marriage and that things will be more okay than they would have been that you can think of? You know, the way that the conversation goes is more or less they go back and forth and she agrees to go home that evening, more or less.
Yeah.
But in a very, very cute way. So, you know, it goes much better than anticipated.
Yeah. Essentially, Mr. Peanut Butter kind of puts up a farcical question like, hey, where do we keep the batteries in this house? And Diane starts telling him, like, no, they're supposed to be in this drawer. He's like, I can't find them. I think I'm going to take them out of the smoke detector.
Yeah.
And there's a moment of panic where she's like, no, don't do that. And what he's essentially doing is he's acknowledging, like, okay, clearly you're not where you said you were, which means you lied. And I'm sure you have a reason for this, but, like, if you're going to be in LA, you might as well come back home.
Yeah.
And they'll resolve that conflict later, but that was just a very sweet.
It was very sweet.
He's extending his half of the bridge.
Yeah, and she's walking on it. She's doing her best. And I think that that's a really good indication that for us as viewers, by the end of the season, we think we can take a small sigh of relief and say, okay, whatever it is that happens between Diane and Mr. Peanut Butter next season, it won't be catastrophic. And at least we don't have to worry about this as much. And I feel like that's what they're doing with all of the characters, really, going out of season two, going into season three. We've already talked about Princess Carolyn, and we've talked about her arc and her exit, and we think, okay, she's gonna be fine. She's gonna be just fine. We don't have to worry about her one bit. She has dumped that dead weight, that fucking asshole Rabinowitz piece sucker, and now we are looking at Diane and Mr. Peanut Butter. We say, okay, they're gonna be okay. The only two left that we are hugely concerned with, of course, are BoJack and Todd. So let's go back into what's going on in that plot point and in that A plot, and we'll talk about how that ends up getting resolved and what that means for BoJack and Todd.
Sure, absolutely. I think it's important that, like, season two, the way it ends, it sets up all of these characters for success.
Yeah.
It sets up Mr. Peanut Butter and Diane into a better understanding of each other, and they can work it out from here. Princess Carolyn starting her new business. Literally the last we see of her is her in her new office with the workers painting things and setting up the new office. And now we're about to get to BoJack and Todd and see how they're going to be set up for success in the next season.
Yeah.
And spoilers, it's literally just that they kind of admit that they like each other.
Yeah, and that they need each other and that they're best friends. The word best friends, definitely those words get thrown out there by BoJack.
Yeah, BoJack essentially finally mentions, like, oh, hey, you know I value this friendship, right?
Yeah. When he's Todd from the improv comedy group that he has been indoctrinated into.
Which is not a cult like Scientology is.
That's the opposite of what.
I know.
My dude, we've been over this.
I know.
We've been over this, man.
Proceed.
We're gonna get sued. Anyway, this is definitely a wonderful, wonderful little segment here where they're trying to escape. Of course, there's all the improv, quote unquote, fighting with all the imaginary weapons and stuff, and BoJack thinks it's ridiculous, but Todd's totally buying into it. This is, of course, after we find out that, you know, that Copernicus has his vast stateroom.
And behind a Wayne Brady poster.
Behind a Wayne Brady poster, he has.
That is so fucking funny.
It's really good. It's very, very good. Well, because, you get that reference, right?
From Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yes.
Yeah, of course. That's why I brought it up, Leslie.
Well, you're young, so I don't know.
Whose Line Is It Anyway has run for like 20 years.
Is he on the new one still?
Yes.
Oh, I haven't watched the new one.
So also, I watched the old one because I'm not as young as you think I am.
I'm pretty young. Anywho, moving on. Yes, behind the Wayne Brady poster, really great nod to Whose Line Is It Anyway there. We see this vast estate. We find the butt jokes book. Todd's betrayed. He realizes what's going on. And then, of course, at the end, when BoJack comes and saves him, and they're climbing onto the bow of Escape from LA from the Giggle Ship, Copernicus throws out one last ditch effort where he says to Todd, you know, this is the guy who ruined your rock opera. Don't you remember? This is the guy who doesn't even remember the morning after you got there. And then BoJack pops out with his memory, and it turns out he was lying to Todd. And he does, in fact, remember quite a lot about the first morning that Todd spent as BoJack's roommate of sorts.
Yeah, yeah, and he corrects Todd's previous recounting of the story with, it was hash browns.
Yep.
You made me hash browns.
Yeah.
And then you threw up in the pool, and I got mad, or I threw up at the pool, and then you threw up in the pool because of that, and I got mad at you for throwing up in my pool.
Yeah.
Etc. So he recounts a different, look, it's also possible that neither of them remember this story correctly at all, and it was in fact bananas. Like... But yeah, it's a sincere moment between these two characters, that one who is emotionally battered and doesn't show affection to people, and the other who is drenched in comedic irony and doesn't often get sincere moments.
Yeah.
And we get a sincere moment between the two of them.
And I love that. I love the sincere moment between them that we have, because it feels like, again, these two characters are also being set up for a little more success in the future. Even if that just means less strain between them, we think, okay, Todd's going to be okay, because Todd's main conflict has been with his friendship with BoJack. And now that that is on the mend, as it were, Todd is taken care of with this plot point. Now, BoJack is not yet taken care of until the very, very, very last scene. And that is when the viewers are sort of reassured, okay, he's going to be fine too, until we return with season 3. And I want to talk about that very briefly.
Hit me.
Because this is running long. So I want to touch on that very briefly, because now we've hit everything. The only thing that I have to say is, oh my gosh. The one thing I have to say is, hold on, let me start that over. Blah, blah, meh. Before I talk about the very, very last scene, though, there is a little bit of setup. There is a little bit of mystery setup in place for what's going to happen in season 3 when Princess Carolyn calls BoJack and tells him that his contact in New York, Jill Pill, really, really wants to talk to him, and that she remembers him from his TV show, working with him on the TV show. And he says, oh, what, horsing around? And she says, no, the other show.
Yeah, that's the most, like, X-Men comic cliffhanger.
Dun, sort of, dun, like, dun! Yeah.
You know, I know you just watched all the MCU movies. You probably aren't familiar with what I'm talking about, but that whole, like, no, there's another. Kind of.
Yeah, oh, sure. I mean, that's a huge trope, yeah.
Yeah, that's some super corny, like, 80s comics.
Oh, but it's especially. Great. Oh, but it's 80s, great.
80s comics did that shit all the time. There would always be characters be like, you know, like, no, you have a brother.
Sure.
Kind
sure.
of thing. And that would be like the, you gotta tune in next month, folks.
Yeah. And that was sort of the cliffhanger, if it can be considered that, for season 3. You know, coming up into season 3.
I think so.
Yeah, definitely. Like, what is this other TV show? Because everything else is fairly wrapped up. I mean, it's like, you know, we don't know. We're going to get to see Princess Carolyn thrive in her new company. We're going to get to see Mr. Peanut Butter and Diane try and repair their relationship and the ups and downs that come with that. We're going to get to see Todd and BoJack repair their friendship. You know, but then what's going to happen with BoJack? Well, we find out not only are we going to see the whole award circuit and all of that, which also gets brought up in this episode. There's a lot that happens in this episode. We didn't even bring up the introduction of, you know, Anna Spanakopita, who is the Oscar whisperer that's going to spend a lot of time with him in season 3. The only other thing I can think of is, that they eventually decide, or BoJack eventually decides to change the name of the orphanage to the Herb Kazaz Memorial Orphanage, which of course gets bungled up into the Gerb Kazaz Memorial Orphanage.
Yeah.
Which is a great guy.
Well, the plaque, we spent a lot of money on the plaque, and these t-shirts already say Gerb Kazaz.
Well, the t-shirts say Gerb, so let's go with the t-shirts. Yeah. It's such a good little gag. It's so dumb, but it's so good. So, right. Now that all of that has been discussed, the very, very last scene is BoJack running up a hill, which is a great, fantastic, Oh my God, amazing callback to one of your favorite scenes ever, Ben, where he is watching the horses run and not doing the running himself. And he's imagining, you know, at the end of season one, what it must be like to be free and to run like these horses. And then you see the reality of it, which is running fucking sucks. Running is really difficult and it's almost impossible. And he's whining about, oh, if my lungs are on fire and all this stuff. And then the monkey that we have seen running all season bends over Bojack, who is collapsed on the ground, and speaks and says the best line in the entire season, in my opinion, which
you have it written down.
I sure do.
Go for it.
Of course I do. He says, it gets easier every day. It gets a little easier, but you got to do it every day. That's the hard part, but it does get easier. And then he runs off. And then the very last thing you see is Bojack's face. And he just says, okay. And that is the season. That's it. That's season two.
And folks, he's not talking about running.
You don't, you think so? Do you think it might be a metaphor?
I think there's a little bit of subtext at play.
Hmm.
Okay. Sometimes writers write one thing to mean another thing.
All right, Ben. Okay, we get
it. But that's not super obvious. Yeah, okay. So he just means like trying to be a better person.
As that is, as ham-fisted and obvious as it just, no, it's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful, and it's so beautifully done. The thing that I love the most about it, and what makes it, what elevates it from just being some heavy-handed moral platitude about what you should be doing with your life, is A, though this is what he was trying to do at the beginning in Brand New Couch, though, and that he never really truly actually got to.
Sure, there's hypothetically been 3 months, 3 or 4 or 5 months between his first attempt at jogging and a second attempt at jogging.
Sure. What interests me, though, is that I think that he's actually pushing himself this time as opposed to the last time when everything was sort of kind of hippy-dippy granola, empty, meaningless words that don't really have any true bearing on how one should live their lives. That said, I think that it's great, to back up, I do think it's great that we have seen this monkey running. I don't know if it's a monkey or a baboon because I clearly don't even know the difference between a rodent and a mammal, so I can't tell you. This beautiful creature, this beautiful simian. We have seen him running the entire season, and finally he speaks, and I love that he's just been like back and forth running in front of Bojack's place the entire time, the entire season. I love him. He's my favorite incidental character, probably.
Yeah, for a guy that has maybe all of like 4 sentences of dialogue too, all of which are like 4 words long.
Yeah, but it's a really important, like,
yeah,
piece of dialogue.
Yeah, he's a mandrill, and mandrills are monkeys.
Thank you.
You're welcome. He is not an ape, which I assume is what you thought it might have been otherwise.
That is what I would have thought.
Yeah, so we should probably start wrapping this one up. One more thing I want to talk about is Anna Spanakopita, who appears for maybe all of a minute toward the end. Lenny Turtletaub is showing Bojack this movie that was completed without him. They digitally replaced him, which is a topic I'll talk about a lot next season. Don't worry, folks. This is what my degree is in.
I was worried.
Thanks. But he also introduces him to Anna Spanakopita, who is the Oscar Whisperer, who is a person who is very good at getting awards for films. And she says, like, oh, no, I will let this audience get to know you, etc. Or, no, I'm sorry. He says something along the lines of, like, what, I'm not even in this movie, they don't know me. Oh, no, it doesn't matter, they think they know you, and that's all they need to do. If they can, then they can't know more about you. And that's, like, part of this show's original thesis on, like, celebrity and what it means to be a celebrity, that, like, there is a public image that you are portraying that is not necessarily true at all. And then when a lot of these, in our culture, when a lot of celebrities start showing themselves as normal people, whether that's women celebrities going out in less than Oscar gala dresses, you know, any sort of celebrities acting casual stuff, like, that's just bombarded with confusion, what? You're, that's not the public image you gave us kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But that's also an underlying part of, like, season one, that, like, BoJack has this image that hasn't been touched in, like, 10 years because his show hasn't aired in 10 years or so. And then Diane puts out this book. It's like, no, here's what BoJack's actually like. It's all about levels of knowing a person and, like, what's fake, what's real, what's put on for the show. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's something the show is about a lot, especially season one. And it sounds like they're going to be touching upon that in the future, as BoJack does a lot of press for a movie he does not feel very confident in.
Not a movie that
he's not even in. Yeah,
he's not.
It's all digital BoJack.
Yeah.
Anyway, folks, I think that's going to have to conclude this episode. Leslie, let's talk about our favorite jokes real quick.
I'm looking at my notes to see what my favorite joke is. I mean, obviously the entire Jerb Kazaz thing was a hoot and a holler. I did enjoy when Todd was on the giggle ship, everybody had their little levels displayed on their jumpsuits, and he was a level 8 when he was on the giggle ship, but then for whatever reason, when he was going back with BoJack on Escape to LA, back to BoJack's house, he was a level 2 for some reason. I thought that was quite good. I thought that was quite funny.
Oh, that he got demoted or something?
Yeah, I guess he got demoted to like a level 2. It was pretty great.
That's very, very funny.
Yeah, it was really good. That one probably, I think, because it's so, like, you would totally miss that if you weren't me. I don't know. I don't know why I noticed that. I just did, and I thought that it was really funny.
My favorite gag in this episode is when he is talking to Copernicus at the table, and Copernicus swishes his little half glass of bourbon, and Todd swishes his extremely elaborate, like, fruity margarita drink, and, like, all of, like, the lemon wedges and straws and umbrellas just go flying off the side.
Yes, yes, that is a good one. That's a good one.
Because, yeah, Copernicus is doing that little classy little, oh, let me just fresh up my drink thing. And then Todd does the same, but this, like, capital. Then Todd does the exact same thing and just, like, flings all the plastic garbage hanging off his drink all around the table and sloshes it everywhere.
Yeah, that's pretty fantastic.
That was it. That's just a tiny little Todd thing that I love.
Also, very, very quick shout out to the outro music, which we have, now that there are two seasons, it's become a theme. Of course, the finale no longer has, back in the night, no longer has the group love song. We now get a special song that's nice and inspiring and makes you feel good, but is also somewhat relevant lyrically or otherwise, and it's the wonderful Avant Gardener by Courtney Barnett is the outro music, which I love that song, because of course the lyrics constantly going throughout the chorus are talking about I'm having trouble breathing in. So A+ job.
Yes, just like season one with Wild Horses, this is also a very relevant emotional song to pull us out of this season.
That's what I'm saying. I love it. I'm so, and also, I already can't remember what the Tegan and Sarah, Closer by Tegan and Sarah was a season one ender, which was also very appropriate.
Right.
Super shout out. It was great. Fantastic stuff. Season three is going to be fantastic. I can't wait to watch it and talk about it with all of you.
We are very excited for season three, but first we are going to have to do our season two wrap up episode, which will be next week on Of Horses and Men with Leslie and Ben. Speaking of which, this has been Of Horses and Men with Leslie and Ben. Folks, I am the Ben of that. You can find me online at BenChamlin. That is at Ben C. Hamlin over on Twitter.com, where I'm always talking about comics and making jokes.
I am the Leslie. You can find me at Vanetti, VanEtti, on Twitter, where I talk about a variety of subjects, including but not limited to BoJack Horseman, the MCU, other things, all sorts of stuff that you like.
You can find us both at InfinityBreak23 on Twitter and Facebook. That is Infinity Break, the home of this show and so many others. We are telling stories our own way. That is webcomics, videos, live streams, podcasts, and more. Over at infinitybreak.net. We highly encourage you to check out our other programs. I will spare you all the massive wall of links that I normally leave here. Just a reminder that we have a Patreon at patreon.com/infinitybreak, where you can get access to behind the scenes of Horses and Men content for as little as $1 a month. Leslie and I just did 27 minutes on Sharknado.
Yeah, yeah, we did. And it's wonderful.
This show is produced and edited by myself, Ben Hamlin. I am joined, as always, by the incredible Leslie Yates. Our logo is by Bethany Luthold, and our theme song is by the incomparable Andrew Davis. Thank you very much for listening. We will see you next week with the Season 2 wrap-up.
See you next week.
This podcast is part of Infinity Break, where we're telling stories our own way. You can find all of our shows, podcasts, webcomics, and more at infinitybreak.net. Stay up to date with new show announcements, behind-the-scenes sneak peeks, and updates on your favorite shows. You can follow us on any social media platform by searching for Infinity Break 23. That's Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/infinitybreak. Every dollar helps us improve the quality of this show and create new shows like this one for your listening pleasure. Thank you for listening. Please tell your friends. And as always, stay in the loop.